All right, welcome back. I'd now like to introduce our speaker, and let's give a warm welcome to Lynn from Laguna.
You hugged everybody else. I'll get over that resentment momentarily. My name's Lynn, and I'm a member of Al-Anon.
Amen.
And I'm delighted to be here tonight. It's just too bad there's not too much energy in this group. The crazies and all of you, it's wonderful. I've heard about this group for a number of years. I want to thank Danny for giving me this privilege. And truly, it is a privilege because the program of Al-Anon has changed my life. My home group is the Tuesday night men's stag in Laguna Beach. And I brought a couple of guys with me, or they came with me, that are members of that group, Steve and Gordon. Stand up and let them look at you. I want them to see. We look the same wherever we are. And my friend Steve is sitting up here with me tonight. And, you know, what a pleasure. On the ride up, you know, we just shared. And we talked about what's going on in each of our lives. And that's what we do here. And when Danny called me, I said, you know, I'd be delighted to come. You've asked me before to come. And the last time... It was last year sometime, but a year ago in July, I unplanned, ended up in the emergency room and then in intensive care for 6 days and almost left this planet. And when I got out, I canceled everything I had for the balance of the year. So I want to thank you for allowing me to come. And our group... was started, we had our 20th anniversary in March of this year. We'll have our 21st coming up. And the last two anniversaries, we've had two ladies that I love a lot and I've known for a lot of years as our speakers. And one was Karen A. from Laguna and Pat R. from Oceanside. And I see some of you shaking your heads, and I love them both. I'm here to talk about Al-Anon, but I need to tell you, and I told Danny this on the phone, I'm also a recovering alcoholic. I'm not going to give an AA talk. Don't worry about that, but that the alcoholism does come into my into parts of my story, and I can't just discount it. This also is my birthday month, but it's not here yet in Al-Anon, but the week after Thanksgiving, I'll celebrate 23 years as a regular member of Al-Anon, and it's changed my life. And just so you'll know, my sobriety date is March the 5th, 1965. So, and I say that Al-Anon has changed my life. I cannot tell you what it has done for me. It's taken me to a different level. It's made me a more gentle and kinder and loving person. And I am so, so grateful for that. My original sponsor in the other program, in my second year, sentenced me to Al-Anon. And that's been over 42 years ago. And there was a men's stag then in Malibu, and I went to 6 meetings, which he said I had to go to, and everything you said went in one ear and out the other because I wasn't seeing, I wasn't hearing, and I didn't want to be. Little did I know. So it had to go on and on. And I have tremendous respect. I always did, even prior to my coming in and becoming an active member of the Al-Anon program. I'm a Californian by residence and a Kentuckian by birth. And I grew up in a family where there was a lot of love, maybe too much, I had all of the advantages that a human could ever want in life, and they were never enough. And I tell you, my family, we didn't talk about much. I mean, we sat around, whether it was at the dinner table, the breakfast table, or just sitting around, and we talked about surface things. And I don't blame my family. I don't blame anyone for anything that's gone on in my life. We were talking on the way up. And I learned through programs that, you know, I immediately look to the source, whatever's going on in my life, and the source is me. But that's the way I grew up in kind of a non-communicative family, very religious family. There was no drinking that you could observe in our family. There were a lot of hidden bottles, and they would pull them out, and they would put them back in a hurry when other members of the family that didn't drink would show up. And that's kind of the way I grew up. I around our programs, and we hear a lot of talk, and we have for the last 20, 25 years about dysfunction. People say they're from a dysfunctional family, and I know that to be true. I, too, am from a dysfunctional family. You're looking at the dysfunction in my family. But you know, everything that I've learned in life, I've learned in retrospect. Because I've had to get out beyond it to look back to really see what it was all about. And that still goes on today, thank God. But I've been given the tools here to be able to do that. And you know, I'm really grateful for that. I mean, I had teachers talking to me. I had athletic coaches talking to me. I had parents talking to me. I had friends talking to me. All of them talking to me about my behavior, about my attitudes. And it went in one ear and out the other. But I continued to enjoy life at the time. And I continued to get a good education. I continued to do a lot of things. But I can tell you that the disease of alcoholism took away everything near and dear to me. It took away my family. It took away my friends. It took away an athletic career. It took away business opportunities. It took away my health. It took away my sanity, and at a very young age, I found myself on the streets of Los Angeles in 1964, where my disease had taken me, and that is not where I had come from. I know all about alcoholism. It's a horrible disease. I've got it in my family. We in Al-Anon know about our qualifiers. My qualifier, you're looking at. I don't have to go beyond that. Do I have active alcoholism? Have I had active alcoholism around me? You bet. Have I had people in recovery around me? Hundreds. So I know all about the disease, and it's just absolutely awful. I got a call today from my son in Boston, and I will talk about my adult children. And he had called me, and this young man happens to have celebrated 5 years as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in June, and I thank God for that. And he called me about 3 months ago, and his close friend back there, whom I know well, and who I saw when we were able to go back over the 4th of July, and I was able to give him his chip and then able to share in a couple of meetings in Boston. His niece was almost dead at 23 as a heroin addict. And he said, we're going to send her to California. Yeah. And she doesn't want to come. And my son happened to be on a board out here. His mother was the founder of a recovery facility for women in Orange County called New Directions for Women. And Jim has served on that board, although he is in Boston. And he said, Dad, we're going to put her in New Directions. And I said, fine. So I was able to get some women involved with this young lady out here. She was 5 months pregnant. And I know about the disease concept with this family. Her grandfather died from the disease of alcoholism. She had two uncles that died from the disease of alcoholism. Her father was a paraplegic as a direct result of the disease of alcoholism, and she is a heroin addict. And the friend of my son is a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He's the only one in the family. And the mother of this entire family has never had a drink. So is it hereditary? Is it genetic? You bet. Anyway, we put this young lady in the recovery program out here, and some women surrounded her, and she was 5 months pregnant and got everything working, and they wanted her to stay out here, but no, she wanted to go home. She had a boyfriend that was a heroin addict and a drug dealer, and she wanted to go home, and he was clean and sober, and, you know, everybody knew better. One of the ladies was going to Boston, flew back with her, put her in the hands of recovery people and everything. And I got the call today, and she's no longer with us. And that is the sad, sad part of this disease. And I've seen it go on over and over and over again. But on the other side, I have seen miracles happen in recovery from the disease of alcoholism. I've seen them happen on the side of the alcoholic, and I've seen them happen with family members. And as you and I know, sometimes when the family members get to us in Al-Anon, they're as sick or sicker than the alcoholic or the addict. But the miracles I've seen in recovery are unbelievable. It's a family illness. It's a family recovery. And thank God we've got it. And thank God we're all here tonight. All of us sitting in this room tonight are here because of the disease of alcoholism. I continued with my life even after I got out of college. My disease escalated very quickly. I'm not going to take you all through that, but I can tell you that I traveled the North American continent on the run, running, always having the problem with me. And in 1964, I got off an airplane at LAX and I came out of a blackout. And here I was, and there I was. And the next 6.5 to 7 months were spent on the streets of Los Angeles, and I never want to forget that. I never want to forget that. I finally was picked up by two men, because in the end, very simply, and I was young, I was still in my 20s, the bottle had beaten me to death. I didn't call AA. A social worker found me on the streets, took me to a place where a man would give me a bed and knew I was in bad shape, and called her family doctor, and he had a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this man and another man came, and they unlocked the door and came in, and I was lying on the floor, and I tried to get up and tell them who I was. And I want to tell you that I was a sick, dying drunk. And they were to put, we didn't have treatment facilities back then. They detox you, put you in sanitariums. They took me to a place on Fairfax Avenue called the Beverly Lake, and they put me in there. And I was in DTs and in bad shape. I was in bad shape, not only physically, but spiritually, emotionally, and mentally, and morally. I was a total wipeout. I knew that Alcoholics Anonymous didn't work. I knew there was no God. I had swung in and out of the doors of AA all over these United States, using the people within the program. I had prayed to God, help me, give me this, give me this, give me this, and I promise I'll do that. None of it had worked, so I knew that God didn't work. I knew AA didn't work. But lying there In my own desperation, I cried out silently one more time, "Help." And little did I know that a surrender had taken place in my life. Help. And I was taken out of there and taken to a place that's still around today called the Bimini. I was put in the kitchen to wash dishes, and that's where my life began. And I never want to forget that. And I don't care what program you're in, if you're in Al-Anon, if you're in AA, if you're in Alateen, whatever your 12-step program is. I have found the answer, and it has been simplified for me, thank God. It's called love and service. And I had no idea what either of those words meant. I proceeded to do what I was told. I'm from the old school. I proceeded to do everything they told me to do, including sponsorship, which I think is critical. I think it's critical in all of our programs. I think both things that were read tonight, the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, are critical to all of us. And that's the way it was given to me. I didn't know what service meant. I just knew that I was terrified. And the uncovering process started for me. The uncovering, discovering, discarding, and recovering. Little by little, very slowly, thank God. I went to a lot of step meetings. I went to book meetings. I took direction. I was sitting one night on the west side of Los Angeles. They needed a coffee maker in a group. I raised my hand. I became the coffee maker. Back then, it was in a facility that's still here, still around today. It's Ohio Street. You had pottery cups. You had big coffee mugs. You made the coffee. You served the coffee. You washed the mugs afterward. Before I knew it, I was making coffee for 5 groups. I had no idea that that was being of service. The only thing I knew was that it made me feel a little better, and it made me feel like what I could see in your eyes that you had that I didn't. And you know, that has carried through with me to this day. And people ask me today, "Lynn, why are you still so active?" I said, because these programs are the single greatest happenings in my lifetime. They are the foundation of my life. And I try to live it to the best of my ability every day. Because you see, I treat it as a gift, and I treat it as a God-given gift. And my prayer every morning is, "God, if there's anyone I can help, please let me know. Because my business is His business, and His business is to take care of me." And I've learned that through the process for so many, many years. I was to meet a beautiful, beautiful young lady who was in her mid-20s, and we were to fall in love and have an incredible life together. She's the mother of my children. We lived on the west side for a long time. She was active. I was active. She was active both in both programs at that time. I was active in one. That was prior to Al-Anon for me. But we were active. We moved to Laguna Beach in January of 1972. And when I was new in the other program, they had taken me to 2 or 3 meetings, and I'd heard a man speak. And the only thought I had was, no human can live the way that man sounds. They took me to the next meeting, and I heard him again. The third meeting, he came over to me, and he said, "Son, how you doing?" I said, "Great." He knew better. He wrote his name down on a card and said, "I want you to call me tomorrow." I didn't call him. I was taken shortly thereafter to the Beverly Hills Men's Stag, which was his home group. At that time, he came over to me, sat down, and said, "You didn't call me." I said, "No." I had no idea who he was. He said, "You either call me tomorrow," or he was going to call the founder of that, the Mary Lynn Foundation, where I was, and I was terrified of that man. So I called him. And this man started to pick me up, or if I could get a pass, I'd ride the bus and get a transfer and meet him at his office, and started to ride all over greater Los Angeles. And this man carried the message. The message of love and life for free and for fun. And he was an incredible man, and he helped thousands all over the world. And I was very blessed to have him in my life. And when we moved to Laguna Beach, he said, "You're mine now." I said, "You don't sponsor people." He said, "I'm going to make an exception with you." And I'm grateful that he did. I've always had a sponsor. I've never changed sponsors in any of the programs. Mine have died, and I've gotten new ones. That makes my current sponsor a little nervous. I was just with him last month, and I love this man. I met him in 1972 at the Palm Springs Roundup, and I've always loved him. And when Chuck died, I got another sponsor temporarily. We sponsored each other, and he died, and I called Dave because I... And he just celebrated in the other program 51 years. And we were at one of the oldest conferences in this country called Blackstone in Virginia. It was AANLNON. And I've had the privilege to go back there two other times. And I love it. I was telling the guys about it on the way up tonight. The AANLNON is just incredible there. And so is the AA. But the whole weekend is just so uplifting in the mountains. And what they've done for years there on Sunday, they have it... what they call the spiritual morning, and they have a choir. And they've been doing this since I've been going there, and I got the privilege to go there probably 35 years ago for the first time. They're all Al-Anon members and AA members, and they have a choir director. And they practice, and there are about 45 of them. And I got it gives me goosebumps to tell this. I can to see them on that stage on Sunday morning first thing, and they sing for 45 minutes. And you think they're into God? I mean, it lifts you, and then you go up to the spiritual call-up meeting, and that makes you know that God could and would and does. And I'm so grateful to have had those opportunities over the years. Right out of college, I better remember to tell you this. I told you my disease started to gallop. I found a young lady that was a wonderful, wonderful person. I had gone back home to go in the family business, which I turned my back on, but I found myself in Atlanta with no other choices as a direct result of my disease, and I went back, and all my friends were married, and I thought that's the answer. Unfortunately for her, because I was an irresponsible, insecure drunk. And we had a baby daughter out of that marriage. And I didn't see that daughter for 9.5 years as a direct result of that disease. She's here and been in my life and our lives for many, many, many years. But Pam and I had two children. We were in Laguna. Life was good. Everything kind of rotated around our home, Al-Anon and AA. She was active. I was active. I'd talk on a Saturday night at a conference in Florida with I don't know whether how many of you, maybe some of the women that have some time here might remember, but one of my favorite all-time Al-Anons from Oklahoma, Ramona. And God, I loved her. If you get a chance and you haven't heard her, if you can ever get your hands on a tape, she's absolutely fantastic. She said, "Let's go call Pam," and we went to the room and called her. Her mother answered in Laguna. And I said, "Well, where's Pam?" And she said, "Lynn, she's in the hospital." I said, "What?" She said, "Oh, it's nothing. She just had some lower back pain. They're running some tests." But it was something, because 10.5 months later, she was dead. It was leukemia. And I'm going to tell you that you surrounded us. I mean, you and Al-Anon, you and AA, the Alateens also. I had the great privilege at that time of co-sponsoring an Alateen group in Laguna. You were there, whether it was at UCLA giving blood, whether it was in Laguna taking care of our children, whatever there was to do, you were there. And I've seen that go on over and over and over in our fellowships. We take care of one another. That is love and service. That's what we do, and it was unbelievable. And we were all there on October the 16th, 1985, when Pam stepped into the next room. And I had very young children. Our oldest daughter had come out here. I'll tell you how that happened. My original sponsor, when after I had finally done my second group of steps and done my second ninth step, I knew he knew, and I knew I knew. The one exclusion on there was that daughter that I hadn't seen in all those years as a direct result of my disease. He said, "Len, what about that daughter in Chicago?" I said, "Oh, yeah. I hadn't forgotten." I had that fear going, that fear of rejection, fear of abandonment, fear, fear, fear. I didn't know what fear was, and so I started to uncover. And there it was, when it finally, fear of abandonment, fear of success, fear of failure, fear, fear, fear. And we all know that, and I look back today, and as that third step started to work in my life, faith started to come into my life. And it's never left. I have tremendous faith in these programs, in the recovery. I have faith in the God of my choosing. And that faith I've found has to move into trust. I'll talk a little about that a little later. But anyway, I knew I had to do that. And he told me exactly how to do that amends. And I did just the opposite. I was pulling a lawyer off bar stools to try to get visitation rights, and he was successful. I wasn't carrying any message. I called her mother and said, "I'm coming back to Chicago. I want to see Gail." That was our daughter's name. "And I'm going to spend the weekend with her." I got on an airplane. I flew to Chicago. I was in bad shape, and I knew it. I got there. I called central office. They said, "There's a meeting 2.5 blocks from you at a place called the Mustard Seed." I hit the pavement, walked in there at 6 o'clock, walked out an hour later, less crazy than when I walked in. I went back to the hotel. I called her mother, and she said, "Len, she doesn't want to see you." And thank God it happened that way, because it put me on my knees that night in that hotel room, and I said, "God, you take it. God, you take it. I can't handle it." And I got up and wrote both her mother and Gail a separate letter of amends, and I will never forget that Saturday morning as I took the elevator down, went to the desk, and got stamps and mailed those two letters. I was given another gift of freedom. And I got on that airplane and flew back and walked into that house in Laguna Beach, and I stayed in touch with that daughter all year. Didn't matter. I'd write her a letter. I'd send her cards. Easter, Valentine's Day, birthdays, everything. And I just told her I loved her. Because you see, I had been taught that here, to love you. I had to first learn that I had to learn to love myself. And I didn't know how to do that, and you showed me. I just told her I loved her. And about a year later, after I'd been back there, her mother called and said, "Len, she wants to see you." And she walked into our home in Laguna Beach, and she's been here ever since. And when she graduated out here from college, we were all there. Her mother had remarried, all of her family, and I sat between Pam and Gail's mother. And her mother looked up to me at me as she walked up on that stage to get her diploma and said, "I can't thank you enough for what you've done for Gail." I said, "Don't thank me. Thank these programs in recovery. Because nothing would be possible without it. Nothing that goes on in my life today would be possible." I can tell you that when Pam stepped into that next room and we were all there, I had no idea what the mothers of the world do. That was in 1985. I had those young kids. Gail had just started college. But you'd taught me a couple of really important things. And that was the ability to be honest. Because when they brought me here, one of the first things they told me was to tell the truth. And I said, which truth? Because I didn't know the truth. And you showed me how to do that. And it will come to you through the workings of these steps and through the workings of the traditions. And they both are equally important. And that started to happen. And the other thing you taught me was how to communicate. How to communicate through listening. And I started to grow with my children, particularly the young ones. And right after Pam had died, not long after, I knew that I needed something else. I knew it. I had been living a life where I had been doing a lot. I'm a developer. I'd been developing in Florida. I would come home on the weekends. I'd put my bag down. I'd pick another bag up, and I'd go off somewhere else to a conference. I'd come back home, go back to Florida. I was driving up the east coast of Florida one night, and a light came on and said, Len, you know, talking about a spiritual experience, it said, Len, you need to go home. You've got those small children. And I gave up what I had there, and I became willing to come home, and I did, and thank God I did it. But I started to grow with those children and learn with those children. And the week after Thanksgiving in 1985, I called my dear friend Elsa C., Elsa Chamberlain. She was like a surrogate mother to me. I absolutely loved her, and I said, could we have lunch? And she said, sure. And I don't know how many of you in here knew Elsa, but what a lady. She was incredible, and we went to lunch, and I talked to her, and she started to laugh. And her whole thing was stay on the light side. And she said, Len, I think you better turn yourself into Al-Anon. And you know, I did just that. I walked into that home meeting of hers, which just celebrated its 50th anniversary. And I didn't walk in there as someone that had almost 22 years in the other program. I walked in there as a newcomer. And I listened to you, and you helped me tremendously. And I knew how to do a four-step. And I watch guys come in today, and I'm really, I'm the sergeant of arms, really. I'm sure there's some double winners in here, or whatever you want to call yourself. But we've got them in our group, too. But Al-Anon is spoken in our group. And sometimes we have them from the other program come in there and think they're in that other meeting, and I immediately tell them, that's it, in the parking lot. I'll talk to you. Because it puts the hair on my neck. Now, do I think the two programs go hand in hand? Absolutely. I've had the great privilege of working the steps on both sides, and it's an absolute necessity that you work the Al-Anon steps the Al-Anon way, and I've had the privilege of doing that. The first fourth step I took was the only way I knew to take a fourth step. And I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote, and there was a woman in New York at the time, and she was better than a black belt Al-Anon. She was tough. And I called her. I was doing a lot of business back there, and she said, come over tomorrow night. And I went over with what looked like a great American novel, and she said, put it aside. And I was introduced to the Blueprint Guide of Progress, which is incredible. And I'm sure there are none of you in here, Al-Anons, that have not done that. I hope not, because I think it's absolutely wonderful. I've had the privilege over the last 22 years of doing three of them. And the guys I sponsor, I go through them, and we believe in that in our group, and I get more out of them doing it than I do when I do it. But it's so critical, the steps to recovery. One of the first lessons I had to learn here was the ability to keep my mouth shut, and that was very difficult for me because I was a reactor. And the women started to tell me things like, Len, get up and get out of the room. Get out of the house. If you're in your office, get out of your office. Get out of a business meeting. Get out wherever you are. just keep your mouth shut. And you know I learned that lesson. Thank God. And I've learned so many gifted lessons in the Al-Anon program. My children started to grow up. And any of you in here that have raised teenagers, they don't have to be alcoholics or addicts, but if you've raised teenagers, you know what I'm talking about. But I've had some problems in that area too. And, my middle daughter finished college and then she went to work and then she went back to law school and she lives very close to where we are tonight. She's been a practicing attorney in Los Angeles for a lot of years. And I love her dearly. She's an incredible woman today. An incredible woman. And we have the relationship we have and we have had for years all because of these programs of recovery. And in particular, Al-Anon. Because you see, Al-Anon for me is about relationships. And that's the area of my life where I've had to do the most work. And not just Hen and Chin. All the relationships I have, whether it's in the workplace, in my family, with one of you, whatever. But I have found for me that the two most important relationships I have is the relationship I have with the God of my choosing and the relationship I have with myself. A man asked me 25 years ago, one night, "Len, what kind of a relationship do you have with yourself?" I said, "Terrific." I was coming back from way down in East San Diego County one night, and I got to thinking about that. And I asked myself, "What kind of relationship do you have with yourself, Len?" And I had to get willing one more time, and willing has been a key for me, and become willing to be vulnerable one more time and go to a deeper level. And that's when Al-Anon started to take over in my life. And my, has that helped. You taught me about setting boundaries. I could set boundaries, but my problem was following through with them. And I had one of my adult children that was in college, and there were a lot of problems going on. And a lot of scary things happening. And I'd heard you talk over and over and over again about no is a complete sentence. Not no but not no, and then this is the reason. But no, period. And I got that. But I want to tell you something, that doing the right thing, I've found through life sometimes, is real scary and it hurts. But we learn to do it in here. So I learned to follow through with the boundaries. And this is a number of years ago when I was living alone. I was commuting to downtown Los Angeles from Laguna for work every day. I'd get up at 4:30 and the phone rang one morning about 4:15 and I answered it and there was this beautiful blonde young lady that was in the Long Beach jail. She had been to a party in Los Angeles and had dropped a friend off and was picked up. And she said, "Dad, please come get me quick. I've got the Mother's Day program at school." And I said, "I can't do that. I love you, but I'm sorry, I can't do that." I didn't even use the word sorry. I said, "I can't do that. I love you." She called back about an hour later and she said, "You have to come get me and I have to get my car out and it's going to be $450. I said, "I can't do that." No. Did that hurt? You bet it hurt. But you had given me direction and you'd given me the strength and the courage to be able to do that. I got to tell you, she's terrific today. She's a school teacher. She's married to a school teacher and a coach. They've got two wonderful boys that are our grandsons. We went trick-or-treating with them on Halloween. I went as Darth Vader with my 2.5-year-old who was... Hey! He said, "Grampy..." I said, "What are you going to wear, Keaton?" "I'm going to go with Darth Vader, you too." I said, "You got it." And the 5 5.5-year-old, and You know, what a gift that is. What a gift that is. And she got her stuff together and everything. And I'm grateful for that. I became willing, due to financial difficulties and everything, I'd been in business myself for years, to become willing to go back in the corporate world, and I did that 14 years ago this month. And I found myself getting up at 4:30 every morning and driving to downtown Los Angeles to the One Wilshire building. And when I'd hit the freeway every morning, I'd say, thank you, God, for the opportunity. I never once said, why me? I said, thank you, God, for the opportunity. We finally moved to Orange County years ago. And you know, I'm still in that company. I guarantee you I'm the oldest one there, but I'm still hanging on. And they still seem to want me around. All because of these programs. And what you've taught me here about the gift of giving. And you know, I have so many young people come into my office today, I can't tell you. They're not addicts or alcoholics necessarily. They come in to talk to me about problems they've got. And you know what I talk to them about? What we're given through these programs. That's what I talk to them about, because that's all I know. That's the walk we walk in here. That's the gift we've been given. There's nothing like it on the face of this earth. 6 years ago, last month, we were at a birthday celebration in Laguna Beach. My wife, and I will talk about her, walked out and said, quick, a lot of music going. I said, what? Said, take this cell phone. I said, I can't hear. She said, go in the house. I went in there, I went in the bathroom, and my son, who had excelled in every area of his life, he had gone back east to college, done extremely well. He'd worked in New York for 4 years. He'd gone back and gotten an MBA at one of the finest institutions in the world. He was with a company. He was doing well. We had no idea. But I look back today and I can see where it was happening, because of some of the things that he said were happening to him, I can see, but I didn't recognize it at the time. It was his girlfriend of 9 years who he had met when he was a senior in college and she was a freshman, crying and saying that Jim had disappeared. And they haven't been able to find him in a day and a half. And they'd looked everywhere. We left that party, and on the way home, I started to have those thoughts and think about some of the things he'd told me. And I thought he was dead. And we prayed all night as the people came over, and we prayed for him, and we were terrified is what we were. And at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning, the phone rang. And he said, Dad, I need help. And I can tell you, like his dad, when I was first introduced to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't want to be alcoholic and I didn't want to be a member of AA. And he was the same way. And he swung in and out of the doors for a year, and thank God he's alive today. And he called back about a year later and said, I'm not getting it. Maybe I should go through treatment. I said, it's your choice. He got on an airplane, flew out here, and went to Betty Ford for 28 days and flew back to Boston, didn't know if he had a job or not. And they kept him. And he got involved in his own recovery and is so involved that it's just unbelievable. It's just a blessing. I had the privilege of speaking at the Massachusetts State Convention 2 or 3 years ago, and I looked down in front of me on Saturday night, 3 tables of young people, all of them were friends of his, and what a joy. And before I talked, right after the banquet, I walked into the men's room, and he was in there, and he just looked at me, and he said, Dad, hugged me and gave me a kiss and said, thank you. He hesitated for a minute, and he looked at me and said, don't screw up. But you know, we've got that kind of relationship today. So any of you that are sitting in here that have children or have loved ones that active in the disease, I just want you to know, over 43 and a half years, I've seen miracles happen. Never give up. But the most important thing is, don't give up on yourself. You're here in the right place in Al-Anon. Focus on yourself. God takes care of all of us. I know that to be fact. I talked a little and I got to quit. But I'm going to tell you this. I talked a little about a year ago in July. I'd been running pretty hard. And when they threw me in intensive care, it was a rare form of pneumonia and they didn't think they were going to be able to do anything about it. And my heart went out. And all my kids were here. All my family were here. But I tell you, that first night, I was in intensive care and I was terrified. They had all the tubes in me, the thing over my face and everything, and I sat up. I pulled all the tubes out. I had no idea what day it was or anything, and there was a clock just like the one back on the wall right there, and I looked across. It said 5:20. I turned immediately, and I talk about trust. And I said, God, if you're there, help me. And I went back down. They reattached everything. And I came to a number of hours later. And I wasn't out of the woods, but I was at peace. And I was at peace because one more time, I asked God for help. And you know, God never fails. It may not be the answer you want or I want, but one more time, and I'd like to tell you that I've always maintained that trust. I haven't. It wavers sometimes. My faith doesn't, but my trust every now and then will waver a little bit. I immediately go back to God, thank you, and my thought process turns to God. And I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for the gifts of Al-Anon and what it has given me today. And it's taken me, as I told you up front, to a much, much, much deeper level. And wherever I go, I was telling them out of town, I've always gone to meetings out of town. I go to Al-Anon meetings wherever I am. And I go in and I tell them I'm a member of Al-Anon. And my home group is the men's stag on Tuesday night in Laguna Beach. And I sit and I listen. And you tell my story and you share with me and you give me the strength and the courage that we all give each other. I've loved being here tonight. And I want to tell each and every one of you that I love every one of you. And if no one's told you that today, I want to tell you. And if you haven't put your arms around somebody today and hugged them and told them you loved them, please do so. I do that every day of my life to everyone I know. I love you. Because you see, you've given me the gift of love. You taught me how to love myself, therefore I'm able to love all of you. I'm going to close with a story that really sums up everything I'm trying to share tonight. It's a story of a man that owns a fine Swiss watch. He owned a fine Swiss watch. He loved it more than any possession he'd ever had in his lifetime. And it quit running on him one day, and he would wind it. It would run for a while and then stop and then run. He finally took it to a watchmaker, and the watchmaker repaired it, and he went through a series of watchmakers. And he knew not what else to do, and one morning very early, he was sitting in his den, his desk lamp was on, and one more time he was winding that watch. And as he started to put it on, he saw what he thought were a couple of scratches, and he got his magnifying glass out and looked at it very carefully. And they weren't scratches at all. It was a very small inscription that said very simply, "In case of trouble, return to Maker." And you know, I believe that. In case of trouble, return to Maker. I love Al-Anon, and I love all of you. Thank you.